And good morning. Good morning. This is Will Seaman. With Hala Goris in the studio this morning for One Land, Many Voices. Good morning, Hala.
Good morning, Will, and good morning to our listeners.
And that was a little bit of an abbreviated intro music for our program. We have a very special guest this morning, all the way from Gaza City in Gaza. Actually, she may not be in Gaza City this morning. Dr. Mona El Farah. She is director of Gaza Projects for the Middle East Children's Alliance, a group we'll be talking a little bit more about later in the program. Dr. El Farah is a physician by training, a human rights and women's rights activist by practice in the occupied Gaza Strip. She was born in Khan Yunis, Gaza, and has been dedicated and working tirelessly to develop community-based programs aimed at improving health quality in Gaza and to link health services with cultural and recreational services all over the Gaza Strip. Dr. El Farah is also vice president of the Palestinian Red Crescent Society, and she has a blog. She has a son and two daughters, and she has a web blog, a blog called From Gaza with Love at www.fromgaza.blogspot.com. Dr. El Farah, welcome to One Land, Many Voices.
Thank you very much. Good evening. It is the evening now in Gaza, and hello to everybody in the States.
Thank you. I want to mention to our listeners as well, we are going to invite your calls as well. If you have questions or comments about our discussion this morning, you can call at 503-231-8187. That's 503-231-8187.
Dr. El Farah, this is Hala. Good evening to you. Your time. Are you in Gaza City?
At the minute in Gaza. I was just a while ago in Khan Yunis and Rafah, but now I am in Gaza.
Okay. Well, let's start with the current situation in Gaza. This morning, the BBC reported that the Egyptian government has resealed the border with Gaza, closing down openings in the border wall that has been blown up in several places. Go ahead, doctor.
Yes. They are trying to reseal the borders to rearrange the movement from Gaza to Egypt and vice versa. They are up till this minute, the Egyptians are unable to close the borders completely, and they announced that they will reseal it gradually. What happened at the border? It was expected. I think that we live in a big steam cooker, big pressure cooker, with a very small piece of land, highly populated, with continuous aggression, continuous military, Israeli military operations against us, with lack of medications, lack of medical supplies, and above that, lack of fuel and electricity. So when the borders were stormed by the military people in Gaza, it was expected for all this influx to go directly to Egypt, for people to go and bring their basic needs like fuel, like food, detergents. We don't have detergents at the moment in Gaza, washing powder, washing appliques, etc. And another factor I think is very important, that the psychological well-being of the mass population, feeling that you are isolated and you are under home arrest in your own country. So it was normal for people to go and explore and to travel outside the Gaza Strip. So I don't find it strange what happened. It was expected, but of course I was not happy about the chaos that the camera tried to show. But before this chaos, we should understand how the situation of people in Gaza. We, the Palestinian people, we live under very, very hardship situation, and I am through my work with them. Middle East Children's Alliance, I can see this every day during my work, because we coordinate relief work for families in Gaza, and we coordinate cultural support for children in different cultural centers in the refugee camps in Gaza. And through my activities, through my regular meetings with families and children, I can see how the situation is inhuman and unacceptable, unaccepted to live under occupation in this century. And more than poverty, it's not just people who are deprived of their basic needs. It, more than that, it is the feeling that you are controlled by the occupation. All the time, the borders are closed, and several military raids every day against Gaza, either by air or by land. We don't feel safe, and the number of casualties, people who are wounded because of these military operations, are increasing. And this puts pressure again on health facilities in Gaza. Besides, our health facilities in Gaza are not adequate, and we need to refer our patients for treatment abroad. Up till now, we have at least 75 patients who died while waiting to cross the borders. They were denied accessibility to further treatment abroad, so they died. And we have another 1,000 urgent cases are in urgent need to be treated abroad because we don't have the right treatment for them in Gaza, and they are waiting for death sentence. So adding to that, we have patients in the ICU, intensive care unit patients, 100 patients I was told by my colleagues at Ashifa Hospital, and another 400 patients on renal dialysis machines. Of course, the treatment has been affected because of the lack of electricity. And as you may know, that for the 1 week now, we have blackouts in Gaza, but fortunately, 2 days ago, we have the power back, but on a regular basis. For example, I wrote in my blog that, thank you, Mr. Bush, I can have my shower now, but this was not complete truth because the power is very irregular. And for example, in my apartment, I have electricity for 2-3 hours. Then it is out again, and this is not accepted. And I don't know how we are coping. For me, I am coping. I am adapting myself because I'm working with people. But while working with people through my Mecca project, through Middle East Children's Alliance project, I feel the size of the problem. It is huge, and it is what's happening in Gaza at the moment is real humanitarian crisis.
You are in the midst of this humanitarian crisis. You know, it struck me that Olmert made the comment that without fuel, Gazans can just walk. But that's actually false in terms of what's happening on the ground. You're talking about patients dying, people starving. Can you tell us what your program, the Middle East Children's Alliance, has been able to do in Gaza?
Yeah, at the moment we are organizing big shipment of medication and medical supplies to enter Gaza. And there is a fundraising campaign going now. So anybody who wants to help Gazan patients can go to the Middle Eastern Alliance online donations, because this is extremely needed. Extremely needed, because one major part of our problems here, lack of medications and medical supplies. This is one level. Another level, while running or supporting the cultural centers for children in different areas of Gaza Strip, in Rafah, in Khan Yunis, in Sayrat refugee camp, Jabalia, Bit Lahia, we have centers that we support. By supporting this cultural program, we support the psychology of the children. Because, so it's indirect psychological support. While we are doing this to the children who are experiencing nothing but poverty, insecurity, feeling insecure, losing parents or losing brothers or sisters, in such circumstances, it is really hard for our children to grow in such circumstances. So Mecca, Middle Eastern Alliance, Mecca, support the center to attract the children to come and to distract them away from the areas where poverty is prevalent and where misery is the case in the areas of the refugee camps. We support them via programs like reading, like cultural activities, dancing, painting. I believe this is very important, and this is very important vision to indirect support of the psychology of the children and to teach them the culture of peace amongst wars. And this is very difficult. It sounds difficult, but This is what we are doing now. When you are living in war area, you appreciate peace more than anybody else in the world. This is one of the things we do in our centers. Besides, we all the time try to overcome the gap between our life here and the institution and the outside world. Our children grow up in this hostile atmosphere, this violent atmosphere. So as time goes by and as we see that all what's happening for us is through the occupation with the support of the USA, so our children, the USA government, I mean, so our children grow up hating the other side world. In our centers, we try to convince them that people of the USA, people of the West are different to their governments. And just if you can bear up with me once, well, after my visit to the USA, and I was talking with the children about my visit, about the wonderful American people I have met in my visit, who believe in peace and justice, etc., and who love you, who support you. One of the children, he is only 9 years old, he told me, but the governments are elected by the people. So his question was very remarkable, from young child trying to tell me indirectly that why people don't affect make the change in choosing a government that supports peace rather than exporting misery and war to our area.
I want to mention to our listeners, those people who do care about what's going on in Gaza, this this group that you've mentioned, the Middle East Children's Alliance. You can get to that group on the web at meccaforpeace.org. I believe that's the website, meccaforpeace.org, or we've linked to it from our website at pdxjustice.org, where you can find our programs, pdxjustice.org, where you can also find links to the U.S. campaign to end the occupation, which has a number of urgent actions around the crisis in Gaza, as well as to the Middle East Children's Alliance, and also for a relief convoy that the Israeli peace group Gush Shalom has organized. And all of these, you can find ways to donate to support the material aid programs of Middle East Children's Alliance. We are speaking with Dr. Mona El-Farah, who is speaking to us from Gaza. Your phone calls are welcome this morning. If you have a question, this is one of those very rare opportunities for folks here in the United States, folks here in the Portland area and beyond, to actually speak to some people, speak to someone in Gaza to find out firsthand what it's like living under the U.S.-backed Israeli siege and blockade. You can call us at 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. And I wonder, Dr. El-Farah, if you could talk a little bit about, concretely, you've mentioned the shortages of fuel that has caused electricity to be intermittent, but also concretely the impact on people's lives, because many people, of course, who are dealing with health issues in Gaza, they are not only treated at the hospitals. So, for example, I saw a very moving photograph of a child who was on a respirator, and his brother and his parents had to manually pump air into his lungs because, of course, the respirator that had been provided to him by the hospital in their home wasn't running because there was no electricity. Can you talk more about the concrete impact on people's lives of this blockade?
Yeah. I mentioned earlier that at least 75 people and patients died while waiting to cross the borders. And I mentioned the renal dialysis patients, 400 patients that undergo treatment in the hospitals, but what's happening? In the hospitals, we have generators. But generators, to be run, the generator, it needs fuel. And for the last week, we did not have enough fuel in Gaza. Israel, as a sort of propaganda, I call it propaganda, they mentioned that they will let fuel enter Gaza, and we felt very relieved, but it was just not enough to meet the needs of the hospitals and the population. And many patients' lives have been affected, and the picture you mentioned, you have seen for this child, affecting our the electricity is affecting our team in Al Awda Hospital, for example. They have to rationalize. We have to rationalize our medical, our surgical operations, and that means we should say this patient's needs to be operated upon before that one. It is a very hard decision, by the way, because for emergency operations, some of our patients die while waiting for the operation. But for the cold cases, it is unfair to say that this patient needs priority more than the other. It is a very hard situation for the health.
These are indeed
people.
Very...
Besides the fact that we are not safe. We are not safe because the military operations are continuous in Gaza and the drones still in the sky watching us. And during this blockage, many, many military operations conducted. And Israel, when they say the military operation, it is justified by the rocket shelling against the south part of Israel. And for me, I believe these rockets are not really serious. It's not really damaging Israeli people's lives. I am personally against hating of any civilians, but Israel is taking these rockets as pretense or pretext to continue its attacks against Gaza, continue demolishing the infrastructure, including health, economy, land, everything, to demolish this infrastructure and to make it to make the Palestinian state dream is not near, or to make it impossible with such demolished, destroyed infrastructure. This is the plan, this is the strategy of Israel at the moment. But I just like the American listeners to know that these rockets are homemade rockets. They are not serious, and Israel is exaggerating what is happening through rocket. This rocket business. I am personally against some any military action against civilians. I don't accept. I don't agree with this. But in the same time, I agree. The occupation is illegal too, and the right of resistance for Palestinian people should be guaranteed according to international law. There is occupation. There is resistance. But what sort of resistance? For example, I am practicing resistance through my work with Middle East Children's Alliance, Mecca for Peace. My resistance is to help people to increase their awareness and to make bridges between our people and the world until we achieve our inalienable rights.
Dr. El-Farah, if I could let you know, we have callers that are anxious to ask you questions. If I could remind our callers to please keep your questions or comments on our topic this morning. Go ahead, caller number one, please.
Yeah, sabah al-khair, Doctora. This is Samir Abu Shakra. I'm a Palestinian and I live here in Portland. And I happen to know Barbara Lubin very well. She's a good friend of us. And she did say she is really feel ashamed that her people, the Jewish people, that are doing what they are doing to the Palestinians. What would you say to the American Jews who wave the Holocaust card whenever, you know, appropriate or not? Their own people that are doing exactly what the Nazis are doing to them. And Gaza look like a concentration camps in Auschwitz, or what do you say to the American Jews who are supporting blindly Israel, and what do you say also to the so-called Christian right who scream anything that happens to Israel and they allow this evil act by the Israelis and in the name of the Jewish people? What would you tell them?
Thank
and
you, Colin.
My answer on the line. Okay, bye-bye.
Yeah, okay. First, Gaza is a modern concentration camp, I call it, and what happened, you know, a big crime against humanity. What's happening now in Gaza is also a big crime against humanity. We should not, the world should not wait until there's big genocide in Gaza and people will say we did not know. No, please try to tell everybody that what's happening in Gaza now is big crime, collective punishment, it's war crime, what's happening in Gaza. And I would like to tell the American people in general that this crime is conducted against us, against my people, with the help and the support, full support of the American government, military, economical, political support of the American government. And this is the taxpayers' money. It is the American taxpayers' money that is used to export misery and wars to my people and to other parts of the world. So it is time to think twice before giving your vote to any government that will support Israel to continue with its practices against us. And it's not only against us. I don't see my people as isolated from the outside world. Every injustice should stop now before it is late in any part of the world.
In this big prison of Gaza, we have 1.5 million people that are suffering this collective punishment, this crime. Let's talk to our next caller. Go ahead, caller.
Yes. I wonder, there's a website, gopbias.org, that says that this Israeli, trying to remove all the Palestinians from Palestine, started in 1948. What I'm wondering is there some kind of an exchange program? Our government gives Israel at least four to five billion dollars every year. And couldn't we somehow arrange through with all that money some kind of an exchange program? In other words, adults from the United States travel to Gaza, Gazans travel to the United States. Isn't there some way we could impose that on the Bush regime and force that to come to pass?
The line was not very clear, but if I understood what has been said, exchange programs are very important, but we again in the Middle East Children's Alliance, we have groups, American people coming to Gaza, West Bank and Gaza, but now they cannot enter Gaza, so they go touring in the West Bank to learn more about the history of the area, and now we meet them through video conferences to explain what's happening in Gaza, because with the blockade, few foreign people are allowed to come to Gaza. Another program targeting youth, we started this with the help of Olympia Rafah Sister Project, using the Skype program, which is very, very simple. We have children. I don't call them children because we target age 15 to 17 who, for example, sit in Rafah, in Nusayrat camp, in Jabalia, and other groups, students in Olympia, for example, Olympia City. I would like to talk about this because this is what we are doing now. They sit and chat together using this Skype. But of course, these ways are not reliable because we don't have electricity most of the time, and people don't have computers at their homes. So the cultural organization, for example, Rachel Kuhl Center in Rafah, we provide the computers for the children to go ahead in this program. I think it is very useful, and I invite schools to take part of this program because it is our window to the sky that our children can communicate with others and talk as children, as youth. Not for me to talk about them. They can talk about their daily lives under occupation, and to increase increase the awareness of the American people. It's very important for us to increase awareness of the American people and the whole world about what's happening in my country.
You know, when I heard...
I hope I answered right.
I think you did. I think your connection is still pretty good. I'll tell you, when the last caller asked his question, I immediately thought of George Bush's daughters in an exchange program in Gaza and what they would do, not being able to take showers, not being able to get medical care if they get sick, not having enough food and starving. So I took it as a bit of a facetious question, but I'm not sure. We do have another caller. Go ahead, caller.
Hi. Thank you for the opportunity. The fact of the matter is that Israel should know better, it seems to me, than to attack homemade rockets with all of this enforcement, this concentration camp-style enforcement, because this just creates more such young men and boys who will make more homemade rockets. To your guess,
actually, we have the caller here. I'm going to take the deal with that dial tone to mention that you're tuned to One Land, Many Voices, and you're tuned to KBOO, listener-sponsored community radio, 90.7 FM in Portland, 100.7 FM in Corvallis, and 91.9 FM in the Columbia Gorge, and naturally also available as streaming audio at KBOO's website at www.kboo.fm. And, caller, are you still there? Okay, well, caller, please get back to us. So we are going to soldier through here with a few announcements while we're waiting to see if we can get back in touch with Dr. El-Farah today. You are tuned again to One Land, Many Voices. I'm William Seaman with my co-host, Hala Gores, this morning. As you would find us every fourth Friday of the month at 9 a.m. here on KBOO. I want to mention that today at Friday, 5 p.m. at Pioneer Courthouse Square, there is a special protest of the Gaza siege. It's an End the Gaza Siege protest. It's coordinated with international actions going on all across the planet. And in particular, many of these protests are in support of this special convoy that is being an aid convoy that is being organized by, among other groups, Israeli peace groups such as Gush Shalom and the Israeli Committee Against House Demolitions. The protest here in Portland is happening Friday, today, 5 p.m. at Pioneer Courthouse Square at the corner of Broadway and Yamhill. This is a Portland Peaceful Response Coalition, and full disclosure, I'm a member of that organization. But this is a regular Friday protest, but today is focused on ending the siege against the people of Gaza. So that's at 5 p.m. today at Pioneer Courthouse Square. Also want to mention a very important rally to support public Portland Public Schools custodians. And we'll get back to our guest in just a moment. I want to mention that's Monday, January 28th at 6 p.m. at the school board building at 501 North Dixon Street here in Portland. And that's, again, a rally to support Portland Public Schools custodians and nutrition service workers, a very important struggle. They're facing wage cuts of up to 33%. So your participation in that rally on Monday, January 28th, 6 p.m. at 501 North Dixon Street. And you can find out more by going to the Jobs with Justice webpage. And we are back with our guest, Dr. Mona El-Farah, speaking with us, one of those very rare opportunities that Americans get through KBOO Community Radio to listen to folks who are experiencing directly the siege in Gaza, speaking to us from Gaza. Dr. El-Farah, you're with us again.
Yeah, just I'd like to say something here regarding the electricity, and I wrote about that in my blog, but maybe I have this chance to talk to the American listeners, that we did not have the blog in my flat for continuous 48 hours. After that, I got the power, but it was very irregular, very patchy and irregular. But I really felt depressed, and my seeing my daughter doing her homework using candlelight, I had a thought that this is like as if we are not in the in this modern time. So I did really bad, and I could see my daughter feeling frustrated, restless, and depressed. And my daughter is privileged more than most of the kids, of course, because being a daughter of a doctor. But I was thinking of the whole kids in Gaza Strip, and it came to my mind the number, the percent of the children now in Gaza who suffer of post-traumatic stress syndrome. 62% of the children of Gaza at the moment suffer of the post-traumatic stress disorder, and this is a high number, and this number increased very fast in the last years because of the increasing practices against us. It's us in Gaza. So life is not nice for the children of Gaza. It is not human at all. That's why day after day I'm very determined to continue my work either with the Middle Eastern Alliance or through my position in the Red Crescent Society organization or as a health consultant for Union of Health Work Committee. I struggle hard with others to provide some sort of normal life for our population, but of course we cannot do this. The load is very heavy, and the practices are so harsh and so inhuman. In two words, collective punishment, what's happening against us now, and it is war crime, what's happening, because the cutting of the electricity affects the water, the pumped water into our homes, and it also affects the sewage system. And in many areas of Gaza in the last few days, there was sewage flooding, and this will again add to more health disasters. So as I said, the load is very heavy, and we are trying hard to continue our work in such circumstances. It's not only us, many civil society organizations trying hard to meet the need of the population, but without real and fair solution, political solution for what's happening in Gaza, we will just be running, trying to help. But the main cause is the occupation and lack of vision at the moment for any viable Palestinian state.
Dr. El-Farah, I'm going to give you a chance. We can hear the exhaustion in your voice. I'm going to give you a chance to grab some water while I read a little part of your speech to the UN special meeting last year. You said to the UN special meeting, "Whenever I think of Palestinian children and their lives under occupation, I always think of the Israeli children. As adults, we have a commitment to both sets of children to provide a safe environment for them to live peacefully. It is not the occupation or the wall or ongoing aggression. It is not the occupation or the wall or the ongoing aggression against my people that will bring safety or security for Israeli children. Only peace that is based on justice will do that. Justice means that the inalienable rights of the Palestinian people must be considered. Israel must recognize its moral responsibility toward the Palestinian refugees. While Israel is physically outside Gaza, it still completely controls our lives, all aspects of our lives, health, education, economy, and freedom of movement." Let's go ahead and take one more call since we have a few callers waiting to talk to you. Go ahead, caller.
Thanks again for the opportunity to complete my quick questions. Number one was, it seems to me that peaceful children indeed don't become violent, but in a prison-like environment, the children are going to become violent. I encourage them to teach peace. How do you prevent them from justifying violence in the name of their dead brothers or sisters? And the follow-up question really is, I know that Hamas and Fatah have had their differences, and Hamas is now the elected leadership in Gaza, but and that plays a role in international politics with the terrorist label and everything. Are the people in Gaza happy with Hamas in that sense, and what is Hamas doing for them, and how is it differentiating itself from Ramallah and the party of the Fatah in the West Bank? Thank you.
Doctor, were you able to hear that caller?
Yeah, it was not very clear, but regarding the people of Gaza, we suffer not only from the, to be objective, we don't suffer only from the occupation, we suffer from the fighting between Hamas and Fatah that led to this current situation in Gaza, that Hamas took over Gaza and there was isolation between Gaza and West Bank. So in my opinion, I believe that if the first starting point is to rearrange the Palestinian internal politics and to bring Hamas and Fatah together, then say first the world united. But the problem here is that we have two parties. One party is Hamas, and the other party is the Palestinian leadership, Mr. Abbas and the others, who are very involved or very interested in serving the American government policies in the area. So it is difficult, but it's not impossible to bring those parties together to start the first step towards our national unity and see how can we start another phase of reorganizing ourselves and resisting the occupation. And as I mentioned earlier, resistance is not only military resistance, resistance, all sorts of resistance, because whenever there is occupation, there must be resistance.
The other question the caller asked...
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can
hear you.
Can you
hear me? And thank you for feeling that I'm exhausted, because I'm really exhausted. It is very cold here, very, very, very cold here, and I hope that the Egyptian government can play more role in reconciliation between Fatah and Hamas, But as I said, when some party is very interested to serve the West, it is, let me stay hopeful and not lose hope and faith.
The caller also asked about, you talked about working with Palestinian youth in Gaza, and he talked about what it must be like working with young people who perhaps have lost a family member, who have experienced the violence of the Israeli military when they, as they have very recently, come in and killed dozens of Palestinians. How do you work with the youth in Gaza who have experienced and been traumatized by this kind of military occupation and violence? What are the programs that help you try to map out a different kind of future for these young people?
It is not easy. It is difficult. But as I said, in general, our programs target the youth and the children. And through our program, we can't have a special program for the internal violence, because the internal violence is very small chapter of the violence in the record of the violence that has been against Palestinian people. It's a very short period, and it is not as much as the violence that the Palestinian faced under occupation. But still, all those youth and children are welcome in our centers, and we have social workers too in the centers to go and see whenever there is need for psychological support. We do it indirectly through playing, but also through the health centers. We refer the patients who need, the children who are really traumatized because of either the internal violence or the occupation violence. And through playing, those kids can be diagnosed and referred to other specialized centers to deal with their cases.
Let's go ahead and take another call. Go ahead, caller.
Hello, doctor. I send my love and blessings to you and the people there, and I apologize for the terrible cruelty we're doing to you and the people there. Thank you.
Thank you, caller.
I'm really touched to hear you. Yeah, crying. And but please believe me that Palestinian people, we don't have the mentality of victims. We are strong and tough because our cause or our what happened to us has been through the years, through, it's not only a few years of this cycle of violence against us, it has been going since 1948. But I understand you're crying because it is inhuman what's happening in Gaza. And I am all the time strong and trying to be strong, and I have my weak points as a human being, because it is too much what's happening to us in Gaza. So please, if you need to be positive, just contact the Middle East Children's Alliance, and anything you donate, it will come back to us, to the children of Gaza, to continue their life and be stronger while living under such circumstances.
Our first caller mentioned that someone had said that she feels that the Jewish people are doing this. I want to make a comment about that, because, of course, here in the studio, we have Will Seaman, who is Jewish, and he is not a part of what's the atrocities that are being caused to the Palestinian people. So I want to caution people about not overgeneralizing.
Yes, we try in our centers to educate the children that there is a great difference between Jewish faith and Zionism. What's happening to us in Gaza, in the occupied territories, is made of Zionism. Zionist movement, not the Jewish as a faith. And we all the time try to make this clear to our, this is part of our role as well, that we correct them when they say this is, the Jewish has done this to us. No, it's not the Jewish. It is Israel, the Zionist Israel has done this to you, not the Jewish. And I hope in the future, one day, there will be peace, peace that is based on equal rights. Not peace from strong party against weak party. And then it will be time for us to help in building and making this area prosperous for two nations, for the Israelis and the Palestinians. But this will not happen without acknowledgement of the right of return and living in one country according to equal rights, not strengthening the racist and the Zionist nature of the Israeli government at the moment.
I want to remind our listeners that you're tuned to One Land, Many Voices at KBOO Community Radio this morning. We're very fortunate to be speaking with, from Gaza, Dr. Mona El-Farah. She is director of the Gaza Projects for the Middle East Children's Alliance, a group that we've been talking a little bit about. And I want to again emphasize to our listeners, if you want to do something concretely about what's going on in Gaza, if you want to help, you can do so through the Middle East Children Alliance website at meccaforpeace.org. That's meccaforpeace.org. Or just search on the web for Middle East Children's Alliance. And we've also linked to that organization at our website, pdxjustice.org. And you'll find out, you'll be able to inform yourself more about what's going on, the history of this conflict. But most importantly, finding out what you can do to become engaged with this issue, to learn more about it, and to do something about it, to actually contribute in a concrete way, both in terms of donations you may make, but also in terms of engaging with this issue politically, getting in touch with our representatives in Washington, D.C., and insisting that they take action, they take positive action to end the siege in Gaza and to push to pressure the Israeli government to engage in serious negotiations for a just resolution of this conflict. Again, we are speaking with Dr. Mona El-Farah in Gaza. We welcome your calls. Do we have any other callers on board yet? Then I have another question, because I would like to ask, you know, many of our listeners are, of course, sympathetic, but I also want to keep in mind that there may be people tuned in who are not sympathetic to the point of view that we're talking about today. And one of the arguments that I've heard over and over again in terms of Gaza, and I heard this from people that I meet informally here, but I also heard it from a representative of the Israeli military when I was visiting there last January, and that is, well, the Israeli government has pulled out all of the settlements. There used to be settlements in Gaza. And so the occupation of Gaza was over, they say. Dr. El-Farah, could you talk about why that argument simply isn't valid, why it is that the occupation simply changed when the settlements were withdrawn but didn't come to an end?
Hello?
Yes, can you hear us, Doctor?
Can you hear me? Yes, I can hear you. Yeah, first, when the settlers left Gaza, it was part of Sharon's unilateral plan to leave Gaza isolated and to change the occupation from physical occupation on land to another sort of modern occupation. Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead, Doctor.
Yeah, another sort of occupation. Okay, let them stay in Gaza, let them stay in Gaza, we control them. From outside, we changed Gaza into a big prison. We have the keys in our hands. We have control of the land, of the air, of the crossings. And things have become worse and worse after the occupation left Gaza physically. So what's happening now is a new version of occupation. I need to remind the whole world that we are still under occupation. We're still under occupation. Our lives are in control of our occupier, and I don't expect mercy from my occupier. Yeah. So, but I expect the world to understand and to stop my occupier to do what he's doing to us.
Dr. El-Farah, do the people of Gaza, do people around you hear the support that you receive from people in the Arab and Muslim world, as well as the Palestinians inside of the Green Line?
Yeah, there is a big blockade. Nothing coming to Gaza. Nothing. Just even in the last week, the UNRWA couldn't continue its supplies to Gaza, and since Hamas took over, it was severe blockade. And before that, in the last 2 years, when Hamas won the election. The siege was very severe. It is not only this few months or this few days. We have been under this siege for a long time now, but now it is very bad. It's very worst level.
What has life been like under the Hamas government? Not necessarily in terms of what the Israeli government is doing as supported by the U.S. government, but under Hamas, has there been repression? Can you talk to us about that?
There is repression, of course, and because Hamas was not given chance to control things. First, let me remind you that I'm not Hamas supporter, but I see things as objective person. If Hamas won the election, it was people's democratic choice. It was not given a chance to go ahead with its agenda. But at the moment, because there are no only one party controlling Gaza, which is Hamas. So we don't have Fatah, so there is no fight. So we don't have internal fight between Hamas and Fatah. But to be frank with you also, there is a lot of freedom confiscations under Hamas government, especially against Fatah people. There is some human rights abuse under Hamas control. But this is not the issue. The issue is the Palestinian cause itself, the future of the Palestinian people, the end of the occupation, the end of aggression against my people. This is just a new era in our history, Hamas government. It doesn't worry me a lot, but I'm worried about the whole fate of the Palestinian cause.
We can certainly appreciate that. You know, as a Palestinian myself, I was surprised at... initially surprised at the Hamas election, and then through readings realized that the brutality of the occupation can force people to make certain choices. Do you believe, and again, if you can't answer these questions, please let us know. Do you believe that if the occupation was there, that the if the occupation had not been there, the brutality had not been there, that the Palestinian political process would be different than it is today?
Differently. Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Definitely. The underlying cause is the occupation. We should not forget that. The underlying cause is the occupation supported by the American government, military, politically, and economical support. You should always go to the underlying cause. And even when Hamas won the election, and the West practiced its double standard democracy, and they imposed the siege and the blockade 2 years ago since Hamas won the election. Let's go back to the underlying cause, which is, let's go back and never forget that we are still occupied. The Palestinian people still under occupation. And I was taken over by talking about Gaza, but the situation in the West Bank too, the wall, the wall that separates the West Bank from Palestine 1948, which is Israel now, and the settlers and the checkpoints, the settlements, I mean, and the checkpoints in the West Bank, 543 checkpoints now in the West Bank. I mean, I'm sorry, I'm in Palestinian who believe that Palestine is Palestine, despite of the fact West Bank or Gaza. But I'm very involved talking about Gaza now because you are interviewing me as a person from Gaza. But the occupation is still there, and no peace with occupation, and no peace without justice.
I wonder if we could talk about these recent Israeli military attacks in Gaza. One dimension of life in Gaza that I think is quite terrifying and is a part of what you've discussed in terms of how children have been traumatized are these intermittent attacks, military incursions, where the tanks roll in and there are special forces from the Israelis that are going in to track down people that they accuse of terrorism. And also you mentioned these drones, because one of the innovations of recent months is the fact that these unmanned drones that are flying over Gaza are also a part of these attacks. Can you describe one of these attacks? What are they like living in Gaza, knowing that these kinds of military attacks can take place?
Yeah. Let me first start by giving some numbers. in the last week, the last 2 weeks, 37 people were killed as an outcome of this military operation in Gaza, and 20 out of this number were ordinary Palestinian people, civilians. Yeah. And I had a friend who lived in Jabalia refugee camp, and it was in one of the occasions, they are very close to the area of the attack, and they don't sleep. They sleep on the floor for continuous 3-4 days because their home is, and the army tanks were very close to the, they were at random, I mean, at random of fire. Another thing regarding the drones and these military attacks, especially the assassination attacks, when I'm going to my work, to the Red Crescent Society or any of my visits to my field visits, I don't feel safe because anything can happen any minute. Going to my work while the drone is up in the sky, thinking that they might hit this car now or the other car, I might be caught in the clash. Every time you are worried, you are under this pressure that you might be killed anytime. Even this is so easy, became easy, but still you are afraid of this, of being caught in such a military operation. When I say bye-bye to my daughter when she goes to her school in the morning, I'm not sure if she will come back safe or be caught in such clashes.
Dr. Alfaro, we have one more caller. We're just going to take one more call. Go ahead, caller.
Hello?
Yes.
I understand, or I think the Egyptian government doesn't care for Hamas. And what is its role going to be? I mean, they would jail Hamas people if they ever got into Egypt, wouldn't they?
Dr. Alfaro,
I did not get the question.
That's okay. Our caller wanted to know, his view is that the Egyptian government does not support Hamas, doesn't care for Hamas, and what is their role? I mean, he believes if Hamas Hamas members travel to Egypt, they would be arrested. So what do you believe the role of Egypt can be with respect to the Hamas government?
Talking about the role of Egypt these days after the opening borders, or I mean allowing Palestine to open the borders, or talking about the role of Egyptian in general, I expect the Egyptians to play a more positive role in the reconciliation between Fatah and Hamas as first step towards rearranging the Palestinian home politics. But in the end, going to see the whole picture, the Egyptian regime is part of the regime that is linked to the American policies in the area. So what should I expect from the Egyptian regimes? It says hands are cuffed with treaties, like Camp David treaty, and being part of the countries, not the radical regimes, if there's any radical regime now, but part of the regime that is has good relationship with the American and the Israel. So I expect more from the Egyptian, but I understand why their hands are cuffed at the moment.
We've come to the end of our hour. We've been talking with Dr. Mona El-Farah in Gaza. Again, one of those very rare opportunities for folks here in the United States to hear some voices from Gaza. Gaza under siege right now by a U.S. Backed Israeli blockade of that entire region. Dr. Mona El-Farah, is there any parting thoughts or words that you'd like to share with our audience today?
Any part of what? Sorry, I did not get that. Last word, do you mean?
Yeah, any last words from you?
A last word before this? So last word being positive.
Okay.
No, my last word is Middle Eastern Alliance. We are doing a great job to support people, and we are very dynamic here, and any donation will go to sick children, hungry children, psychological traumatized children, clean water in the schools. So please, if you want to help the Palestinian people at the moment, through online donation to Middle East Children's Alliance, and through knowing more about the makeup programs to increase the people's awareness, American people's awareness about what's happening in Palestine under occupation, and blaming is the first step towards correcting things.
Dr. Mona El-Farah, thank you for joining us from Gaza. We hope you stay safe, inshallah. and we appreciate your patience with our phone line situation.
Thank you very much for interviewing me, and it is, was a good chance for me to address your listeners, and it is sort of window in our sky because we feel suffocated and isolated in Gaza.
Our thoughts are with you. And again, listeners, you've been tuned to One Land, Many Voices on KBOO Community Radio, 90.7 FM in Portland, 100.7 FM in Corvallis, 91.9 FM in the Columbia Gorge, and also at www.kboo.fm. And you, if you've missed any of our previous programs, or you want to hear this program again or tell your friends about it, it is available as streaming audio at the website www.pdxjustice.org, where you'll find links to other terrific programs as well. We are One Land, Many Voices. I'm Will Seaman with Hala Gores, and you can hear us every fourth Friday here on KBOO Community Radio at 9 a.m. as a part of our programming, our wonderful public affairs programming here at KBOO.
Listening to KBOO 90.7 Portland, Oregon. Up next, Leanne Kranz interviews Kesa Jama of the Center for Intercultural Organizing, a group working to build a movement for immigrant and refugee rights. They'll discuss upcoming anti-immigrant ballot measures and more. Stay tuned.